Welcome to the U-Turn Podcast. This is the place to connect to who you truly are. We're bringing PhDs, experts, and leaders to help you elevate your mindset in your work life and in your love life so that you can see things differently and truly love your world. I'm Ashley Stahl. I'm a career expert, author, and TEDx speechwriter and booker, and I'm excited to bring you in to this week's episode. Hey, U-Turn friends, it's Ashley Stahl here, and today we are bringing you a total U-Turn podcast throwback. We love bringing old episodes that got great downloads and a lot of inspiration and a lot of impact back to you. So enjoy without further ado, and I can't wait to hear what you think. All right, friends, it's Ashley Stahl here, and I have such a treat for you. We have Ginger Marie Corwin. She is the author of the best-selling book, Your Weekly Guide to Bliss. She's also a speaker and a life coach, and I figured who better to talk to than her, because she also has such an expertise in love on four steps to call in the one. So whether you're in a relationship and you're realizing it's not a match for you, or you're not and you're feeling so ready to call in that person and to have that kind of connection, we have four steps to talk about it. So Ginger, thank you so much for being on the show.
Hi, Ashley. Thanks so much for having me. I'm really pumped about today's topic.
Me too. And I, those of you listening, I was just telling Ginger that it's 5:30 in the morning in Bali right now. And so I am like ready to rage at the highest level, with lots of caffeine happening. So I'm also, everybody who listens, Ginger, they know I get really excited about love because I called off my wedding 3 years ago and realized I was with the wrong guy after a lot of denial. And he was an amazing person, but not my person. So whenever I ask questions on these love interviews, it's coming from a very personal place where I totally understand what anybody else is going through where they haven't found their person. So I'm curious to kind of hear, like, did you go through some sort of journey that got you to really get intimate with these four steps that you've learned and shared?
Yeah, definitely. I think I had a lot of different relationships when I moved to LA. So I'm originally from Cleveland, Ohio. And, you know, I felt like dating in high school and college was good. I always kind of had a boyfriend for a lot of those years. And I felt like when I moved to LA and started life on my own, I kept meeting these unavailable men where, you know, I felt like there was initial attraction and we would date or hang out for a while. And then it kind of felt like there was this pattern where, they would at some point sort of end up leaving, and I'd kind of have this wound of feeling somewhat abandoned. And it just kept reoccurring, kind of the same scenario in different relationships. And it really forced me to start to look within. You know, the one thing that all of these relationships had in common was myself. So as much as it was easier to blame or think they were the bad guy and I was the victim, it really forced me to start to look within. And it was this coupled with not being happy in where I was in my job and kind of just struggling in my personal life, feeling really unhappy and kind of searching for more, a higher purpose, that I got put on my own spiritual path. And through my spiritual path, learning to really love and accept myself is how I found love. And I really had to look within. I really had to accept myself and let go of a lot of things from the past that I had been holding on to: blame, shame, anger, resentment. And all of it really stemmed from my early childhood. And once I was able to identify that and do a lot of different forgiveness work around it and self-healing, I believe all these things is what allowed me to call in my one. And I was really excited because we ended up getting married in November of 2017.
Oh,
so more or less, thank you so much.
Yeah, great.
More or less 6 months after I kind of went on this journey and I really applied these four steps that I'll talk about later in my own life, that is when I met my husband. So I really feel, you know, I can personally say that these steps worked for me, and I'm really excited to talk more about them. And I hope that my story inspires someone that may be feeling struggling like I did not that long ago in this area of your life, and maybe not really sure why you're attracting the wrong type of partners or why something might not be working or feeling so difficult. And I'm just really hoping that my story can help someone else.
The longer it takes to fall asleep at night, the more stressed out I get about being exhausted the next day. For me personally, the magnesium breakthrough supplement has helped solve my sleep problems, from winding down at the end of a stressful day to tossing and turning and waking up groggy. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers has been such a game changer. Here's the thing. More than 75% of the population is deficient in magnesium. And what most people don't really know is that even if they're taking a magnesium supplement, they're probably still deficient because they're not getting all 7 forms of magnesium. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers is the ultimate way to give your body all 7 forms of magnesium in one supplement. And it's the only product on the market I know doing all 7 of them. Not only does it help you sleep better, but Magnesium Breakthrough helps calm your mind and allows you to feel grounded and relaxed during the day and especially before bed. So don't miss out on the most relaxing sleep you can have with Magnesium Breakthrough. And for an exclusive offer for the U-Turn community, head on over to bioptimizers.com/U-Turn. That's bioptimizers.com/YOUTURN, and use the promo code U-Turn during checkout to save 10%. Again, that's bioptimizers.com and the promo code YOUTURN, U-Turn, during checkout to save 10%.
Beautiful. And, you know, one thing I'm curious to ask you about as we get into these steps is that you'd said something that really struck a chord that I've heard other people say, is that you have to take a look at your personal life. And I've heard it before where people will say, well, what are the things you want? And somebody will write them down or say what they want. And then the next question always comes, well, are you those things? And I get that, you know, maybe some woman or man wants somebody who has their career in order, but their career is feeling really disconnected. I'm curious what your thoughts are on that, because I think we all go through rhythms, and maybe somebody who wants somebody who has their career together is in a chapter where their career is a bit disconnected, but usually they're really on their game and they're really focused on investing in it and, you know, being their best self that they can be. I think that, you know, life has a rhythm, right? And sometimes we're really on our game in all areas, other times we're not. And so I'm curious to understand attracting what you are and attracting what you want, even in times where you're maybe a bit disconnected from something and working on something. Does that mean somebody can't ask for that thing that they might be struggling with at that moment? I'm curious what your opinion is on that.
I think that you absolutely should ask for what you want. I also think that in asking, it is kind of forcing you to look within, because I personally believe that in a lot of different areas, whether that is with abundance, whether that's in relationships, whether that is in your career, that there can be blocks. There can be things subconsciously that you're doing that you don't even know that you're doing that can be interfering with that. So I think 100%, one thing that helps you get closer to what you desire is setting that intention, because with that intention comes clarity. But I also believe that that clarity, with that, it forces you to start to look within it. It forces you to kind of begin to take accountability for maybe your role in that area of your life not potentially being where you want it to be. So I think 100% the way to take action, the way to start to make changes, is to have that clarity on what you want and to start taking action towards that thing. But I also believe with that intention comes accountability, comes learning to love yourself at a deeper level, and learning to, I think part of loving yourself is having compassion for yourself. So maybe you are struggling in love, and one of the biggest steps to self-love is to learn to accept and love yourself no matter what's going on in your life, whether that partner is there or not, whether your career is a hot mess or it's not, whether you have $10 in the bank account or $1 million in the bank account. I think it really does come to accepting yourself where you are, learning to love yourself, and those blocks in that, those things that might be interfering with what you desire.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because I think about how my first business, I did really well, and then I ended up in debt. And for the longest time, it felt like, who am I to ask the universe for a guy who has his career in order when my business just fell apart and now I'm fixing it, you know? Yeah. And so I think a lot of people right now, it's like, maybe they're on their game in life and something's off. And so I'm kind of curious, when you say loving yourself, like having compassion for yourself, setting the intention to fix it. I think that's very much the place that I transitioned into was, you know what, I played really big as an entrepreneur, things worked out and then they didn't. And I have compassion for that. And I'm going to carry forward with that. And so I'm curious, like, what kind of wisdom you have for somebody who maybe is picking up the pieces, because I know step one is make self-love a priority in your four steps to call in your person. So I'm curious kind of to paint a picture of, when does somebody love themselves? When do they not? Like, what does that picture look like? Because I think a lot of people in life, they have to love themselves, but they don't even realize they need to until a situation calls them forward. Like in my case, I had the nicest guy ever for 5 years and he proposed. And then, of course, I called off my wedding. But in those 5 years, he was so loving and so generous with me that I never had to love myself when things got rough, because he was loving me so much, I didn't even notice how I was towards myself. And it wasn't until I let him go that I was on my own and realized, wow, like a lot of people learn to love themselves in situations where they are forced to. And the rug is ripped beneath them. A lot of the times they don't realize that they didn't learn how to love themselves until suddenly a situation so clearly calls it forward. So curious for your wisdom on things like this.
Yeah, I believe our biggest moments of pain can often lead to our most amazing transformations. And I think a little bit of what you were talking about, where sometimes one area of your life might not be working. So is it the right time to want love, or is it the right time to set that intention? And I believe, I mean, kind of what I felt intuitively was, it has to come back to feeling like maybe you don't deserve love if something else in your life is not working, or if something else in your life might be struggling. So I think being deserving of love and knowing that you are deserving of love goes, no matter what circumstances or events are going on in your life, is key. And that ties definitely into self-love. And to me, self-love, I think it looks different for everyone. And it's not something that is boastful, or you thinking that you're, it's not kind of an arrogant thing. Self-love is really a learning to appreciate who you are as a person and stopping to search for that validation in external people and circumstances. Yes, it feels really great when you feel loved by someone else. But I believe in order to have the most healthy, sustainable relationships, you need to learn how to find that love that you seek in another partner within yourself. Because when you love yourself, I believe that makes you so much more attractive to a different person. And it's the more you love yourself, every area of your life improves. And I believe all of your relationships improve because you're not looking for that validation. You're not looking for that completeness. You're not thinking you'll be whole. You're realizing that you already are all those things. And when you are all those things that you're looking for, that's really when you are magnetic to other people. But I believe it's not just a one and done thing. You know, you love yourself and then
boom,
everything is great. It's a daily, it's a daily relationship. Just like, you know, if you were in a romantic relationship, you can fall in love, but it's something that you have to work on every day to keep the love, to keep the feelings of appreciation, to keep the feelings of romance, to keep the feeling of connection. Those same sort of things apply to yourself. Self-love really is a daily, lifelong journey. And I believe that there is kind of this initial self-love that's important, but it's really, you know, it is step one, but it's really a lifelong practice. And I believe, you know, some of the other steps that I'll share are as well, but this one is kind of like initially starting to realize how amazing you are, initially starting to recognize and see yourself the way you want to be seen by someone else.
I love that. And, you know, it kind of reminds me of letting go, because I have gone through some losses and some grief. And what I've learned about letting go is that it's a repeated decision. It's like when my sister passed away, it was like I let go of her when I saw a book that reminded me of her. I let go of her when I found her shampoo in my bedroom. I let go of her. It's like a constant letting go. It's not just something that happens once and you make the decision and it's done. And I think that's the case with letting go of your past or loving yourself. It's like a consistent decision. And I think a lot of people buy into the belief that if they're going to make a decision to love themselves, that it's a moment where they suddenly start doing things differently. But it's not one moment, right? I mean, that's the point you're making. It's a repeated moment all the time when you need to show up for yourself, even when it's not convenient, which I think is really often. So what are some signs that somebody doesn't love themselves for those listening who maybe are wrapping their head around this?
I would say definitely how they talk to themselves, how they talk about themselves. So how critical are they are to themselves? And we're all critical. We all judge ourselves, and pretty much more or less most of us all day long. There, you know, I catch myself in criticism all the time. But I think one important thing is how fast you come back from that criticism.
Yes.
So if you notice yourself, if you notice yourself judging yourself, it's being compassionate, recognizing you're in a judgment and realizing that, that there are more positive things to say about yourself. But I think self-love and self-esteem, self-worth, they all kind of go hand in hand, you know, and asking yourself, am I settling for relationships that don't treat me well, that put me down? And also, if I'm accepting those things, is there a chance, an opportunity for me to love myself more? Because I'm starting to recognize how amazing I am. And I know that settling for someone who doesn't see that or doesn't treat me the way deep down I know I deserve, I think those are signs of an opportunity to love yourself more.
One of my favorite things that was said on the U-Turn podcast is from the episode with dating coach Evan Mark Katz. He said, you don't get, you know, we talk a lot about law of attraction and what you're attracting. And so I think a lot of people would say, wow, I'm attracting a lot of men who don't treat me well or women who don't treat me well. And it's like what Evan said, he said in his episode, you get what you put up with, right? And
yeah.
I think that comes from your self-love. So I think that's really interesting. And I also love what you said about bouncing back quickly, because I do think that in personal development, sometimes we're held to a bar where we shouldn't have certain things. I think there's a judgment where because we run seminars or have podcasts or write books that we shouldn't be having these moments where we're not talking, you know, nicely to ourselves. But I love what you said about bouncing back quickly, because I think that is truly the trademark of somebody who's working on themselves, is that bridge of time between that conversation they're having with themselves that feels toxic and the moment that they let it go. And the smaller that bridge of time, the more work they're obviously doing on themselves. So great. And another step you talked about with calling in the one was making peace with the past. And this is something that I feel so moved by, because I know that a lot of people have unfinished business. And so I think as anybody's listening, it's like inviting you to ask yourself, do you have something in the past that you're holding on to that maybe you don't want to admit? So curious to hear what your thoughts are on this, Ginger.
I believe that the past is something that we replay in the future. It may be different people. It may be a slightly different circumstance. But we will take things from the past. We take our experiences of the world based on things we've experienced in the past. And then we have the ultimate choice of, are we going to let the past replay in the present or in the future? Or are we going to experience the present in the present? So for me personally, I had this fear of abandonment, and it stemmed from my early childhood. My biological parents both struggled with their mental health and weren't able to take care of me properly. And I grew up with my aunt and uncle, and my biological father passed away when I was 10 years old. And my biological mother would kind of come in and out of my life based on things that were going on in her life. And these feelings triggered deep abandonment in me. And when I came to LA and was dating, I kept reliving this trigger of feeling abandoned, feeling that I had been stood up in some way, or that I wasn't enough, that I drove people away. So I had to recognize the pattern that I was creating in the present in my relationships. And I believe that we all kind of do this in some extent. We, you know, our basis for our experiences is what we've experienced previously, but it doesn't have to be what we experience now. And it's recognizing the patterns, the people in your life that have maybe triggered something within you. So for me personally, I had to do a lot of forgiveness work around my relationship with my parents. I had to do a lot of forgiveness work with all the people that I had felt abandoned me. So I remember this one time I was flying back from LA to Cleveland, and I think I'd read somewhere, it was kind of right when I was starting to focus on myself and to focus on self-love and being confident in my skin. And one of the exercises it recommended was to write a letter to those people that had affected me in my past. It wasn't obviously something that I gave to them, but I wrote a letter to everyone that I had felt hurt by, or who I felt some guilt or shame around hurting in some way. And this was such an amazing experience. I felt so much lighter after I did that, because I was holding on to so much anger and resentment. And the second I allowed myself to get it out on paper and to, in an essence, let it go, you know, I ripped up the paper, I threw it out, and I felt this release within me. But I think it's coming to terms with the past and starting to see the positive in the past. So for me, obviously it's easier out of the situation. But if I didn't have these scenarios that happened in the past, I wouldn't have been so gung-ho about learning to love myself, which then kind of inspired me to want to help other people do that. And, you know, all the different products and books and blogs and things that I've been a part of, those all probably wouldn't have happened, or maybe not happened the way they did, if I hadn't experienced pain in the past. So learning to see the past as an opportunity for you to experience growth in the present, and learning to come to pass with it, coming to peace with it through forgiveness, through releasing, through meditation, through affirmations, through EFT, emotional freedom technique, maybe through therapy. You know, it could look different for every person, but it's really starting to make peace with the past, to forgive the past, to let go of what happened in the past, and not let it be what keeps you from living in the present.
That's so helpful that you talked about writing a letter to people about your experience and about forgiving them being a release for you, because I think I was going to, you know, just follow up and say, like, what can people do? Because I know not everybody knows what emotional freedom techniques are, or not everybody can afford a therapist, but everybody can write a letter, you know? Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, is there anything you recommend people cover in this letter where they feel they have unfinished business with somebody? Is there any topics or areas that they want to make sure that they cover as they're doing this exercise?
Hey, U-turn friends, it's Ash here, and I've got to admit, my closet has been incredibly crammed with a lot of clothes, but nothing to wear. The solution? I decided to donate a ton of them and turn to Quince. They are the upgrade for high-quality, affordable pieces. Now I have a wardrobe of luxury essentials that transition from one occasion to the next. And the best part? I stayed on budget. All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. So by partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I just love them. I recently got the Italian pebbled leather crossbody bag, and it is the perfect size for a purse when I'm out on a date night, traveling light, or just don't want anything bulky weighing me down. I really love what they're doing. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/U-turn for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. at quince.com/youturn to get free shipping and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/U-turn.
For me personally, it kind of helps to see the person in my mind's eye, to kind of envision them. I think it's important to talk about how you feel, you know, what emotions invoke around you when you think about this person, or just letting letting your heart speak. You know, there's that voice within you that needs to be heard, and just allowing that voice to speak, to be heard, to be seen. I think that can look slightly different for everyone, whether that is writing all the ways they felt hurt, whether that is writing some of the things that they learned from the experience. Personally, I, at the end, would love to sign them, "I forgive you and I release you," or something to that extent. Maybe you're like, I'm not ready to forgive them. Maybe it's, "I'm willing to forgive you. I'm willing to move past this. I'm willing to try to move on." Mm-hmm. I think some sort of like formal statement of, "I forgive you," or, "I'm willing to move forward," some sort of almost declaration. I think that is important, but I do really feel that everyone's heart knows what it needs to say, what it needs to let out. So just allowing yourself to flow, allowing the pen to flow and to listen to what's coming through for you.
Great. And I'm also curious on this second step, you know, after making self-love a priority, making peace with the past, I'm curious also, you know, beyond forgiving somebody in a note like this and doing an exercise like this, I'm curious on your thoughts about how there's so many people who are holding on to an ex. And I know that they could do this exercise. They can write a forgiveness letter or a release letter. But I'm curious what wisdom you might have for somebody right now who's listening and they're thinking, you know, if there's nothing really coming up for them with their family, maybe they have done some forgiveness or release work, or maybe they haven't felt the need to do that, but they miss an ex and everybody they meet, they compare to that person and they wonder if that's ever going to happen for them again. And so I'm curious if you have any thoughts on that or why people hold on to exes.
I think holding on to exes sometimes can come from that fear of having something you believe is great, or maybe deep down you don't really believe it's great, but the deeper underlying fear is that you'll never find that again, or you'll never meet someone as good. So I believe it does come with that deeper fear of, this is it for me. It may be even a deeper fear of, I'm going to be alone forever. I'm never going to find the right person. And that's really just kind of a story that you're replaying, that you can start to create a new one. But I think holding on to people from the past is because we have some sort of attachment to them. So one thing I like to do is cord cutting. It's imagining that this person is in front of you, you know, picturing them in your mind's eye. And a lot of times just kind of recognizing where you might be holding on to a cord of attachment. A lot of times it might be, you might mentally see that in your heart. You might see it in your chest, in your hands. But you might be holding to an energetic cord with this person. So I think it's important to visualize these cords in your mind's eyes and almost imagine if there was a sword or a scissor starting to cut these cords. And maybe it's the simple attachment, the simple practice of saying, "I'm ready to release. I'm ready to release these cords of attachments." And I've personally experienced when I've still been hung up on someone from the past, that I still had these energetic cords attached to myself of them, where I was still kind of linked to them mentally. And I thought that practice helped a lot. I also feel like we can be attached to people from the past because of what they represent to us. Maybe that's a different emotion of, I felt safe, I felt at peace, I felt loved. So kind of understanding what did this person represent to you?
That's such a great question. And when you offer this exercise of people cutting the cords, you said visualize the mental cords or visualize the cords between you and that person and visualize the scissor or a sword kind of cutting these cords. How can that look? Because I know for everybody, you know, not everybody's the most spiritual listening. You know, I'm selectively spiritual. It's like some moments I'm like, namaste in the rice field. And then the next minute I'm like, whatever. So I'm curious, you know, what is a middle ground for somebody who really wants to benefit from this and they aren't necessarily familiar with that process of visualizing? How can you kind of take them through a couple steps a little bit more to help them really do this? Because I love your question. What was it about them? I think that's great feedback for somebody to take with them. It's like, oh, wow, this person, I realized that they made me feel really, I felt really safe around them. And I've been holding on to that. You know, or that person, I realized that I felt really beautiful around them and I want to feel that again. Mm-hmm. So it's good feedback, but I'm also curious about this process, of how to let them go. I'm also curious to ask you about sexual healing, what it is, and is it even a thing? And why does it turn into people maybe holding on to somebody even longer? Because I've had some friends who've had sexual traumas or whatever have you, and they have a sexual relationship with somebody that really feels healing for them. And they have a story that it's even harder for them to let go of that person because there's some sort of physical magic that happened between that person. It wasn't great sex. It was more like some sort of healing. So I'm curious also, how do we do this exercise and what are your thoughts on sexual healing?
So I would say the first kind of mapping down the steps to do this exercise, it could be as simple as sitting cross-legged. Most of the time when I do exercises like this, I'm just kind of sitting in like lotus pose or crisscross applesauce or cross-legged. I've heard all kinds of different terms for it. Kind of like, it's kind of the seating that you probably sat in like kindergarten, just comfortable seat. And to me personally, I close my eyes and I just start to bring to my mind the person that I feel an energetic cord for. And I know this is about love, but we can kind of have energetic cords with different people as well, whether that is our parents or whether that is someone that you feel a certain emotion towards. It could be love, it could be anger, it could be annoyance, it could be all different things, but feeling like still connected to them, like you can't get them out of your mind, or you're feeling aggravated or missing them, or, you know, whatever. It can kind of depend on the situation. But I close my eyes, I picture them in my mind's eyes, or just think about them. And then I observe where maybe I feel something in my body. So for me, maybe it's, I'm feeling it in my chest. I'm feeling it in my heart. I'm feeling it in my head, almost like a headache or a tightness. Maybe it's in your shoulders. And next I just picture a cord of attachment. So just whether that's like a rope looking, whether that is just a string or something along the lines of that. Just kind of seeing where you feel connected to that person. And then next in my mind's eye is when I would envision either a scissor or an.
At the end of the workday, the last thing I want to do is grocery shop and sometimes cook dinner, which is why I've really come to appreciate Factor meals. Eating better has never been so easy with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to go in 2 minutes. You'll have over 35 different options to choose from every week, including Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, Keto. Also, there are more than 60 add-ons to help you stay fueled up and feeling good all day long. There's no mess, no prep, just clear meals. Factor meals are ready to heat, ready to eat. There's no prepping, cooking, or cleanup as needed. That's something I can get behind. Sign up and save. I've done the math, and Factor meals are less expensive than takeout, and every meal is dietitian approved to be nutritious and delicious. So head on over to factormeals.com/U-turn50 and use the code U-turn50 to get 50% off. That's code U-turn, YOUTURN50 at factormeals.com/U-turn50 to get 50% off. Now let's get back into this week's episode.
A knife or some sharp object like that, just starting to cut through the attachment cords. And I think when you do this exercise, it's also the intention of I'm ready to let go. I'm ready to release what's still keeping me feeling attached to you.
You know, you just touched on something, because I was thinking as you were going through this exercise that some people miss somebody so much or want them in their life so bad, even if they're not there, even if the circumstances are what they are, and they resist letting go of somebody. It's like they want to let them go, but they don't want to let them go because they miss that person. They love that person. So I'm curious what words of wisdom you have for somebody who is thinking about doing this exercise, but they're part of them wants to hold on to their person.
Yeah, I think there is that balance where when we're trying to move on to the next person, we have resistance. We resist the things sometimes that we know are good for us. I would describe this as our voice of our ego, the voice of fear. Again, I think it's slightly fear-based. It's the fear, if I let this person go, they're really gone. Or if I fully commit to letting this person go, maybe I won't find someone else.
So good. Okay. Hey, U-Turners. So sorry for the quick interruption, but I want to make sure you know that this episode has been brought to you by the Job Offer Academy, our e-course to help you land a new job you love. So if you're sick of applying for jobs and never hearing back, and you'd like to try a free version of our job hunting course, just head on over to uturnpodcast.com/job offer. That's uturnpodcast.com/job offer. Now let's get back to this week's episode. And that probably brings us to step number three. So those of you who are tuning in, taking notes, making self-love a priority is number one, making peace with your past. And then number three, change your story. So I'm guessing for people who are holding on to some sort of story, they can change it. And before we get into that, I'm curious about what your thoughts are with the sexual healing.
To me personally, I think that we can have some really amazing experiences sexually, because sex is just a way that we express ourselves. And I think a lot of times, sometimes we can confuse sex with love, like really great sex with just feeling like you really love that person. And I think sex is a wonderful way to express yourself, to feel good, kind of asking yourself if you are confusing the two. Are you confusing really good sex with love, or are you confusing intimacy? Are you confusing that kind of intimacy with true romance and love? And I think that you can heal through sex. I think that it can trigger a lot of different feelings and emotions, especially if there was some sort of trauma or event that happened in the past that maybe you feel different emotions about that haven't fully been resolved. But I think ultimately it is kind of understanding if you feel like the sex was healing something, if it is kind of confusing the two, if you're confusing what you think was really great sex with feeling of a love, or sharing this really deep experience with someone and feeling like these amplified emotions towards them. But I do think that sex can be very healing and very freeing in a way to express yourself. I think that you can have great revelations and experiences when you're having sex. And I think it can be very healing. And ultimately, recognizing that sex doesn't equal love necessarily. Just because you have sex with someone and it's really amazing, it doesn't mean that they're necessarily the right person for you.
But what about the healing? Because I know that maybe somebody doesn't think sex equals love, but they felt this like powerful healing. Like, what is that really about? Because I know for some people listening, like maybe that happened for them, but they couldn't find the words to put to it. Like, what is sexual healing, and how does it happen, or why does it happen, or what is it really about?
Personally, I don't know if I'm 100% familiar with the term in the way that you might mean it.
Got it. Okay.
So I'm not sure if I'm answering the question right.
All good. And then number three, changing your story. Tell me a little bit about how can people change their story? Because you talked about before making peace with the past, and some people, they don't have peace with the past because they feel like, they, I don't know, want to hold on to that person, or it was the last person. They have a lot of stories they're telling themselves about that was the one person, and now that they're gone, nothing's going to happen for me, or whatever those stories are that are keeping them stuck. So how does somebody go about changing that?
I think the first part is identifying what your story is.
Okay.
And sometimes it's blatantly obvious or clear, but maybe not to us. So I like to say, if you're not really sure what your story is, kind of start to ask yourself, what are your patterns? Or are there characteristics or qualities or feelings that are linking all your relationships or a majority of your relationships? So maybe you're asking, well, why do I keep attracting men that are married? Or why do I keep attracting men that just want to hang out and chill? They don't want anything serious. Or why am I attracting relationships where I keep feeling abandoned, or whatever the story is? It's identifying your story. Or why do I keep attracting men that don't treat me very well, or men or women that don't treat me very well? Mm. And if you're having a hard time identifying your story, this is where I would seek out maybe some feedback from someone that you trust, someone that you love, that maybe might be able to see your patterns in a way that maybe you're not ready to see.
Got it. Okay. So let's take the woman who, oh God, I'm trying to think of all my girlfriends. The one who attracts men that just won't commit. Like, they keep on finding guys and they have all this chemistry, and then the guy doesn't want to commit or doesn't want to, you know, fully be in a relationship connection. How would you start facilitating somebody like that? Because I know somebody listening, probably they're thinking, yeah, I keep attracting this, or this keeps happening to me. I wonder what that's about. So what are some steps that somebody could kind of take? Let's say if this is the circumstance.
The first step is recognizing the pattern, which we've identified it, that I'm attracting people that don't want to commit, don't want to have a serious relationship. And recognizing that a pattern, a story, is simply a thought that you've continued to think over and over again until it becomes true to you. Recognizing that this story or this pattern might not even be your own. Mm-hmm. So you probably got it from somewhere else, whether that was society, whether it was from another example of a relationship in your life, maybe it was from your parents, a sibling, maybe it was something that your friends kept telling you of, no, there's no good guys out there. No one wants to commit. No one's looking for anything serious. And at some point you accepted it to be true. Mm. So since you accepted it to be true at some point, you can always find a story to replace that story that you currently have on replay. Mm. So it's identifying what you want to believe. You want to believe that you are attracting available men that can't wait to meet you, that can't wait to date you, that you are in a happy, loving relationship with someone who's ready for a long-term commitment. Mm. So you identify the belief that you want to have, which you can make as an affirmation. So an affirmation is simply a positive statement in the present tense, saying something as if it was already so. So the affirmation could be, I am in a loving, happy, committed relationship, and every day it is getting more and more serious, or something to the lungs of that, of I'm in a happy, committed relationship with someone I love deeply. Mm, and so you start to say that new belief.
And then I love what you said about like really catching what you're saying about the situation and shifting it. But I think that there's also a fine line between accepting what is and denial, right? Like, maybe, you know, like, I think that sometimes when people get into mantras and saying positive things to themselves, there's also that feeling somebody might have of like, I feel delusional. Like, I'm not in a serious relationship that's going somewhere. I'm in a relationship that's not working out. So what are your recommendations for somebody when they're coming up with, you know, affirmations or things to say to themselves? And maybe they're in a relationship that just isn't that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I definitely do. And I would say the biggest thing with affirmations is, or just kind of positive thoughts, is aligning your feelings with what you're saying. So if you're saying something, but you don't believe it, or if you're saying something and not saying it with kind of a certain emotion behind it, it's kind of like confusing your subconscious mind. It's kind of confusing. So what I always like to recommend is anytime that you're really doing your visualizations or affirmations, that you get into a positive state of mind. So maybe you dance around for, I don't know, a couple minutes, or you do something that makes you feel good, like going for a walk, or doing something that you enjoy, like reading, or I don't know, writing or singing or whatever fills your cup, but really getting yourself into a positive state of mind when you're saying affirmations. So it's one thing to say, I'm in a positive, committed relationship. And it's another to say, I'm in a positive, committed relationship. So it's invoking the feeling behind what you're saying. And to me, when I was really doing this practice, I would also try to invoke feelings of what it felt like to be in love, or what it felt like to have love, to experience love. And one of the ways to do that was to recognizing all the love that I already had in my life. Mm. So maybe that's going to gratitude, of focusing on the love that you have in your life. Maybe that's the love of your parents, the love that you're feeling for yourself, the love of your friendships, and trying to feel more of that love and romance in your life in the current moment. So I do believe, yeah, when you say something and don't believe it, or you say something and it doesn't feel right, it's really about kind of getting in that state of mind, of the state of joy, the state of love, the higher frequency emotion that really allows you to be more able to attract what you desire with ease. But with saying it and not believing it, I would say that start with something smaller. Mm. Maybe you simply start with, I am so happy that I am starting to change my beliefs about dating. Mm. Or I am excited to try out this new way of thinking. Mm. And kind of starting to talk yourself to these positive aspects. So according to Esther Hicks, who is kind of a spiritual teacher, it takes about 17 seconds for a thought to create momentum. Mm. So when you're in a negative thought, chances are if you don't change that thought, the next 17 seconds is going to be a negative thought, or maybe, yeah, I never meet the right guys. Then that turns off into a tangent of, I'm going to be alone forever. Then it turns into, I'm never going to meet someone. And it kind of perpetuates. So you have to interrupt those thoughts. You have to recognize when you are telling that old story. And it's in those moments that you start to talk yourself up to a more positive thought. So maybe it's, I'm willing to start thinking a little bit differently. I'm ready to start changing some of my patterns. I think there are a lot of great guys out there. And if my friend met someone great, or if this ginger girl that I was listening to on the podcast, if she was able to
change her woman, God bless her,
then maybe I can too. Yeah. So you start to kind of shift the momentum. So one minute you're telling yourself you're going to end up alone and that you suck. And the next minute you're starting to recognize, I'm in my old story again. This story doesn't feel good. Obviously it hasn't got me what I want. So maybe I'm going to try a different way.
So good. And it's so interesting. Somebody who's in my Career Clarity Lab course, which is to help people figure out their purpose in the world, they were like, Ashley, I'm figuring out what I want to do with my career. Can you help me figure out my right person? I'm like, I'm the wrong person for this. So I'm so excited we have this episode, because this is something that I think a lot of people are getting their life in order in so many ways. And this is just yet another way to, do it. And I just so appreciate you so much for sharing this information with people who need it. And I know the final part is number 4, calling in love. So I would love to hear from you what that means and how people can do it. Because whenever I think of my spirituality, how I was saying I'm selectively spiritual, I'm like, calling in love, like, what the fuck? Like, what am I gonna do? So, you know, I'm a perfect case for you here on the U-Turn podcast. You know, perfect little guinea pig spirit animal for anybody listening trying to figure it out.
No, I love that. And thank you so much for saying that, because I am very spiritual. So if any point I'm saying things that don't make sense, let me know, because sometimes I get in my own spiritual talk and
a lot of people say that. And I've said it myself. Like, I've definitely sat over a coffee and been like, I'm ready to call in love. But I think everybody listening, it feels so, you know, like, what are we going to do? Sit in a circle and do a little dance. And like, suddenly the person feels like a rain dance, you know, waiting for the rain to come. Yeah. Which, you know, by the way, the rain will always eventually come. So I guess the dance always works. Yeah. But I'm curious how this looks and what someone can do in a practical sense.
Yeah. So to me, calling in love is the art of manifesting, which to me, manifesting means setting your intentions, getting into the energy of what your intention looks like to be able to match that or to attract it into your life. So some of my favorite ways to call in love is to get really clear and specific about what you desire. So this kind of goes well with the last step when you were asking me about if someone's having a really hard time letting go of someone and recognizing, you know, what did you really enjoy about that person? Were they really kind for you? Did they make you feel sexy? Did they make you feel special? Were they gentlemanly or chivalrous or whatever you really loved about that past relationship? Mm-hmm. And starting to identify the characteristics that you want in your ideal partner. So I did this exercise before I met my husband. I started writing down the things that were really important for me. And I got clear on what that looks like and some deal breakers. So some deal breakers maybe was, I know these are things that are just, if this person came into your life, you know that if this one thing or something that was really important to you, if they didn't have it, that's just something, you know, you probably don't even want to open the door. So I'll give an example. So some deal breakers for people might be if their partner has children, or if their partner smokes or drinks, if they don't, or if their partner is a religion that they know deep down they want someone who is the same religion or belief or spirituality as them. So things like that, things that you just know, for whatever reason, this is really important to me. And I don't think that I would want to be in a relationship where that is not on the table. I mean, people sometimes are with people for years and deep down they know they want to have children and their partner doesn't. And, you know, it ends up being something that causes them to make a decision if they want to be together or not. So thinking about those types of things ahead of time, I think is important, of what's really important to me. What is this person? What characteristics does this person have that are really important to me? Mm-hmm. So writing those things down. And I also believe it has a lot to do with feeling love in your life already. So acting as if you already are in that relationship. So how would someone in love act and feel and talk about love versus what you're doing right now? Wow. So would someone in love talk about, say, there's no one good out there, they're all taken? Or would someone in love say things differently? Or would someone in love hold themselves a different way? Would they act a different way? Would they talk a different way? Would they present themselves in a different way? And I started doing really small, subtle shifts. So for instance, I would start sleeping on one side of the bed, leaving room for my significant other that I was calling in. I started going on my dream dates by myself before he actually appeared. One thing I think a lot of people put off is doing the things they think they need to do in a relationship. Mm. So if you want to go travel, go travel. Don't wait till you have the right person. If you want to go see that chick flick, go see it. You don't have to have a relationship to go see something or to go do something or to go to a restaurant you want to try. So I started doing the things I wanted to do. I started taking myself on dates. I started going places that I've always wanted to go but put off. So beginning to live as if, beginning to act as if you already are in love. And I would invoke the feeling. I would sit and think about what it felt like to be in love before I was in love. And I believe that this expectancy, this act of certainty is what allowed love to come in. Because it's one thing to be like, I want a relationship. Where is he? It's another to be
like, God bless us all. We sound like that. I'm sure somebody listening right now is like, shit, that sounds like me.
It definitely sounded like me before, but at one point it turned into, I know he's coming and I can't wait to meet him. Mm. It was a certainty. It was an expectation. It was a feeling of knowing and trusting that he was on his way to me, and feeling that love that I wanted to feel before he actually physically arrived.
I love that. And I mean, I also just want to encourage anybody listening, like, your list is your list, right? Like, everybody has different wants and needs. And it's so funny. One of my best friends, Jason Goldberg, who was also on the podcast the other day, we had lunch before I headed over to Indonesia. And he's like, read me your list. And I was like, all right. And I hadn't read it in so long. It's almost like I've changed since I wrote it. But in my deal breakers, I wrote no bad haircut. I was just like, what was I thinking when I wrote this? And so I think I also just want to encourage people who are writing their list to know that you change and you move with time. So there's nothing wrong with revisiting it if you've already written it before, because, you know, maybe you're okay with a bad haircut later. Ginger, this has been awesome. Where can everybody find you?
You can find me on Facebook, facebook.com/ Ginger Marie Corwin, Instagram, Ginger Marie Corwin. And my website is gingermariecorwin.com.
I was like, I'm seeing a trend here. Okay. Thank you so much, Ginger. And thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Ashley. I had a blast.
Thank you so much for tuning into the U-Turn podcast. And thank you again so much for our sponsors. We are here because of you. And to our listeners, thank you for checking out our sponsors. We always pick people and brands that we trust and we believe in. And just for listening to the show, writing your reviews on the Apple app, and just being willing to make your own U-Turns. We'll see you next week.
This episode is brought to you by the Yap Media Podcast Network. I'm Hala Taha, CEO of the award-winning digital media empire, Yap Media, and host of Yap Young and Profiting Podcast, a number one entrepreneurship and self-improvement podcast where you can listen, learn, and profit. On Young and Profiting Podcast, I interview the brightest minds in the world, and I turn their wisdom into actionable advice that you can use in your daily life. Each week, we dive into a new topic like the art of side hustles, how to level up your influence and persuasion, and goal setting. I interview A-list guests on Young and Profiting. I've got the best guests, like the world's number one negotiation expert, Chris Voss, Shark Damon John, serial entrepreneurs Alex and Layla Hormozi, and even movie stars like Matthew McConaughey. There's absolutely no fluff on my podcast, and that's on purpose. Every episode is jam-packed with advice that's going to push your life forward. I do my research, I get straight to the point, and I take things really seriously, which is why I'm known as the podcast princess and how I became one of the top podcasters in the world in less than 5 years. Young and Profiting Podcast is for all ages. Don't let the name fool you. It's an advanced show. As long as you want to learn and level up, you will be forever young. So join podcast royalty and subscribe to Young and Profiting Podcast, or Yap, like it's often called by my Yap fam, on Apple, Spotify, CastBox, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.